Imagine trying to write a letter to 25 different churches. Your job is to encourage them, support them, correct them where they need to be corrected, prepare them for the future. Now add to it that they are a combination of Gentile Christians and Jewish Christians. Not only that, but some of them, the Jewish Christians in particular, had to leave the city of Rome for 5 years. And when they came back, those who were the Gentile Christians had grown in number. Not only had they grown in number, but you can imagine they had taken on all kinds of different leadership positions. And so you were coming back as a Jewish Christian into that situation. Imagine what community life was like in those days. We think we have it tough sometimes, trying to figure out our diversity. It was to just that kind of situation that Paul was trying to write this letter to all the churches in Rome. They didn't all get together at one time. They didn't have a huge body that governed them. They were all individual churches. And so Paul wrote to them to give them some wisdom. And it's no wonder that in that letter, Paul tried to say something about the will of God. Don't be like the world, but somehow try to get your minds around the will of God. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking to a pastor friend of mine who had been teaching a class on the book of Romans. She said that in the class, at one point, she heard herself saying, "Oh, I don't believe in the will of God." And a couple of people in the class who were members of her congregation were very startled by what she said. Not only startled, but a little bit disturbed. And so she said they waited after class and they came to her and said, "How exactly can you be a pastor and not believe in the will of God?" And she said that it was at that moment that she realized she might have a little bit of work to do. She didn't realize she was going to say that before she said it. It just came out. And now, all of a sudden, she had to do something to kind of figure out why it was that she said that and what on earth she was going to say to her congregation about it. Well, just at that moment, the situation could not have been any more perfect. Her mother, who was visiting her and was listening to our conversation from a different room, came into the room and she said, "I'll tell you what I think the will of God is." Well, don't you know, I was very interested because I was in the middle physically of these two. So she said, "I think the will of God is that we exercise our free will." Well, at that moment, my friend absolutely erupted and said, "Well, you didn't think that 10 years ago when I got married and you didn't come." So a little window into why she might have said she doesn't believe in the will of God. And her mother answered by saying, "Well, 10 years ago, I didn't believe it was the will of God. Now, 10 years later, I know it was the will of God." A very deep moment between mother and daughter. Mother then left the room and left the house as had been planned, which was probably a very good thing. And daughter, my pastor friend, went on to say, "I just can't deal with it. I just can't deal with this whole idea that God has everything figured out ahead of time and all we're doing is somehow living into it like we're puppets or something." She, like many of us, had been raised Presbyterian with the notion of predestination, right? We're kind of like Catholics in that way. We're all Presbyterian, and we're supposed to believe in predestination, and very few of us do. So she said, I just can't deal with that, and I can't deal with that idea in Psalm 139 that says, all the days of our lives were written in the book of life before we were even born. That, I just don't believe that. I just don't, see, that's why I said I don't believe in the will of God. Well, she had grown up with that notion, like many of us, and when we were growing up, the will of God was explained, it seemed, often, in one of two ways. Either the will of God had to do with the fact that God had a plan for everything about your life. So God had a person you were going to marry, God had a job you were going to do, a place you were going to live. One of the theologians that I read said it was, that notion is a little bit like the cosmic Easter egg hunt. The will of God is the egg, and God hides it, and you're supposed to go find it. I grew up with that. Literally. I mean, we were told God had one person in mind. And, I mean, you can imagine the pressure trying to find the one person that God wanted us to be with for life out of billions of people in the world. It was constantly, did I miss it? Did I miss it? Did I, you know? I mean, it's a lot of pressure trying to find the will of God in that situation. But that's often how it's described. Or the other way is equally difficult, which is, no, God created the universe, God created us, and then set us loose. That's kind of more the idea of God as distant cousin. We sort of keep in touch now and then, see each other every so often once in a while, but that's about as far as the relationship goes. And so it's no wonder that a lot of us have difficulty with the idea of the will of God. It's so easy to explain it like that, that God is in control of everything when things are going well. It's pretty easy to buy into. If your life is going well and things are good, kind of easy to buy into that idea. When it gets tough is when things aren't going so well. Right? So when your best friend calls and says her 11-year-old daughter is dying of cancer, how do you explain the will of God? When an entire city is wiped out by a tornado, what do you say? What do you have to say about the will of God? When somebody's spouse is dying way too soon, what do you say about the will of God? You know, because you read the newspaper, you pick it up sometimes and it's tragedy after tragedy or violent event after violent event. And how in the world do we talk about the will of God in the midst of all those things that are happening? Look around our world. How do we begin to say anything about the will of God? It's troubling because there are those who find it comforting to think that God is in absolute control of everything. And so when one of my best friends from seminary was losing her 11-year-old daughter to liver cancer and then she died, she had people coming up to her, Presbyterian pastor, had people coming up to her saying, God needed your daughter in heaven. God wanted one more beautiful flower for God's bouquet. She would call me crying and telling me about the things that people were saying to her about how God wanted and needed this thing to happen. Unbelievable. Some people find it more comforting to think that God is in control of everything than to think that there might be some things that are happening that God is not directly in control of. And so they try to offer comfort to others, which, as you can imagine, is not comforting at all. And so the opposite extreme is to just say, God isn't in control of any of it. And yet neither one of those feels very satisfying to us. In the Bible study last week on Wednesday, we were talking about the will of God. Peggy Alter said it very well. She said, I think that the will of God is really more about God's priorities. We're supposed to be about God's priorities. And what better way to know what God's priorities are than to look at the life of Jesus? Jesus shows what God's priorities are. Well, Peggy was absolutely on to something, and on to the same thing that Paul was trying to do in the letter to the Romans. Before chapter 12, which is where we have our text from today, Paul writes all kinds of things about how Jesus is the new vision. That Jesus is the one who shows these communities what is the will of God. So for 11 chapters, it's all about how you, no matter how hard you work, no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try to, you know, be this or be that, in the end, it's Jesus who is the new vision. So he begins chapter 12 by saying, therefore, meaning connected to all that Jesus is and has done, now, therefore, this is how you are to act. And Paul was not like some of the other writers who were very anti-human body. Paul was actually into the human body and said, so present your bodies, a living sacrifice. These bodies, these human bodies, these bodies can help bring about God's vision for the world. And then began to focus us on the will of God. God's priorities. Last week at the mission study team meeting, Marge Nicholson reminded us all of a quote by Frederick Buechner. Frederick Buechner is an ordained Presbyterian minister who is also an accomplished author. He's written many, many books, and one of them is titled Wishful Thinking. And in it, he wrote, I'm going to read it so I don't forget it. He wrote, the place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. Well, a few years after he wrote that, he was interviewed on PBS. And the interviewer asked this question, what is your advice to a young person trying to find out what to do in life, trying to figure out a vocation? And this was Frederick Buechner's answer. I never got my own quotation quite straight. That's a funny thing to say. There was a little piece I once read on vocation, or all these voices, vocare, to call, vocation, calling you to be this or to do that. Which one do you answer? I said, the vocation for you is the one in which your deep gladness and the world's deep need meet. When you are doing what you are happiest doing, it must also be something that not only makes you happy, but that the world needs to have done. In other words, if what makes you happy is going out and living it up and spending all your money on wine, women, and song, The world doesn't need that. But on the other hand, if you give your life to good works, you go and work in a leper colony, and it doesn't make you happy, the chances are you're not doing it very well. Those for whom you are doing it will recognize that this is not an act of love. It's a good work, and they are the object of it. Just the other day, somebody my age, in some sort of a crisis, said, "I don't feel I'm being what I ought to be." And I said, "What makes you happiest? That's the clue." I struck him dumb. He said, "I never thought that. What makes me happy?" I think he was thinking, "What makes me useful? What makes me religious?" No, no, no. What makes you, in the deepest sense of the word, happy? That's what you should be doing if the other part is also met. If it is something the world needs. Now it gets confusing, the notion of the will of God, because we can't figure out whether it means us individually or us as community. So again, at the extreme end of people who say God is in control of absolutely everything, it gets to the point where people are in a shoe store looking at two different pairs of shoes and saying, "God, which ones do you want me to buy?" Do you think I'm kidding? I am not kidding. That the will of God has to do with every action I take. And then the other extreme, which is never giving a thought to anything, because after all, God has just set us loose. But there really is a middle ground. We do not have to throw out the will of God baby with the extreme bathwater on either end. I love what Buechner says, because what he says speaks to us individually and it speaks to us as community. As we're trying to live our lives and live into the future, as we are trying to discern what is it that God would have us to do or to be, we can use what he said as a kind of rubric. Is it something that makes us happy? Do we feel joy in doing it? Is it something that the world needs? And then adding Peggy's definition to it, is it a part of what God's priorities are? So we don't have to throw it all out. In fact, I would encourage us not to. We may not need to wear a bracelet, or we may need to. It would do us well to wake up in the morning and wonder, how can we partner with God today? How can we partner with God today in bringing about God's vision, God's priorities? How can we partner with God in bringing about shalom to our world and in the people we meet this day? Amen.